The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this April 15th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's another beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area, and my goodness, do we have a lot to talk about on the show today. We've got baseball going on for Auburn, who is in Jack State tonight for a midweek game. We've also got an Auburn baseball interview for you today. Plus, we're going to get some insight from the Texas perspective as well for Auburn baseball as the Tigers head to Austin for the first time this weekend. Basketball portal news, football portal news, so much to get to here on the show today. We're glad that you're with us and joining me in the studio as he does every single day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you? Happy Tuesday, sir.
Happy Tuesday. Keyshawn passing the ball to Keyshawn next year as Auburn gets another big-time transfer portal commit. Really excited to be able to dive into all of that. And we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but being able to spend a whole lot of time on it, kind of breaking down all three games against LSU, what we saw, what we liked, what we can still see this team improve on. As we mentioned, they take on Jacksonville State tonight before heading to the number one team in the country, the Texas Longhorns, talking about the records versus the splits home and away. Auburn going to have to do something they haven't necessarily done extremely well so far this season, and that's playing away from Plainsman Park, but excited to be able to talk about all of that. Again, getting some of that insight from Texas as Auburn heads to Austin this weekend, and then a little bit of Auburn football talk in there as well. As talking season is continuing, the transfer portal news is continuing to rise and elevate and become more of a topic of discussion. Does Nico Iomaliava have a home yet? We'll talk about that here this afternoon. Got to have our full thoughts on that whole chaos going on, but again, some more and more news dropping just about every single hour about whether or not he has a home, whether or not anybody's willing to budge that $4 million mark, which is just absolutely insane to think about. Now there's teams that are holding out to see if he lowers that asking or that demanding price. But again, all of that here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Really excited to be able to dive into everything here this afternoon.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to get to, and with some interviews and some guests that we have lined up today, we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines. If you want to be a part of the show, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. As Auburn basketball has some more portal news you can react to, which we're going to give our thoughts on here momentarily. Or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And that's where we begin today as transfer portal news going crazy. A big piece of news just broke in. Bad news for the SEC. Good news for a Big Ten squad and a top 15 score that just committed somewhere. Lamar Wilkerson, who Auburn was in on there for a while, yeah, was supposed to have a visit from Lamar Wilkerson. He visited Indiana, was scheduled to visit Kentucky. I don't know if he officially did or not. Auburn and Ole Miss were on that list as well. He canceled those visits, and for good reason. He just committed to Indiana about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know they had all of those Zoom conversations where you can't necessarily go on campus, but yeah, canceled all of those. So again, one player decides to go elsewhere. One player stays within the SEC and stays within the old SEC West, if you will, and that is Keyshawn Murphy. He is the former Mississippi State forward that averaged 11.7 points per game, just over 7 rebounds, and 1.1 blocks per game. stands at 6'10", but is very, very mobile at that position and at that height. Again, just somebody, one of the most physical players in the SEC down low, not necessarily going to shoot it outside the paint, can if needed, but feels much more comfortable inside the paint, getting rebounds, a great pick and roll option, and he makes his way to the Plains, and Bruce Pearl gets that piece, one of those pieces that he is very, very excited about. It's one of those guys, Jacob, that you look at. Again, we follow college basketball as close as just about anybody, especially during the season, and we've talked about it a couple of the games where, man, if Auburn could get somebody like that, just the physicality, the willingness, the rebounding ability that Keyshawn Murphy has, you wonder what somebody like that would do for your team. And then you go and look at Mississippi State's roster, and you see that they're one of the better offensive and total rebounding teams in the SEC or in the country. Keyshawn Murphy was a very, very big part of that, and he's now making his way to the orange and blue, making his way to the Plains, is Keyshawn Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for a replacement for Jahni Broom / Dylan Cardwell. I mean, you're looking for that first big man to step on to next year's squad, with Dylan, of course, graduating and Jahni moving on to the next level, whatever that may be. And so, yeah, you were looking for the replacement, right? And you get somebody who not only has played big-time basketball in Power 5, he played right here in the SEC. So Auburn was scouting him already. They knew he was somebody they wanted to go after if he were to enter the portal. He did. Auburn jumps on him. Somebody who was being sought after by several other places, and he decides to pick Auburn. And look, I think he's somebody who can create his own scoring options. He's somebody that runs the pick and roll very well. If he can develop a jump shot better than what he has right now, he could be very dangerous. And I've already seen people who have started the discussions of he could be the next great NBA player that Auburn develops. I just don't think he was getting the development that he needed or maybe even wanted at Mississippi State, but you have a chance to do that here on the Plains.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, almost their sixth man, but still played somewhat starter minutes. Again, averaged almost 12 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, shot 57% from the floor, is a career 63% free throw shooter. Can shoot the three again if needed, but that's not anywhere where he feels confident. But again, you're looking at it, averaged 3.3 his freshman year, 4.7 points per game his sophomore year, averaged 11.7 points per game in his junior year. So continuing to feel more and more comfortable with his body and with his style of play. Again, 6'10", 230, the native of Birmingham, Alabama. So you knew as soon as he was making his list in the transfer portal, Auburn and Alabama were both going to seek after him, very much so, with both of those teams losing a whole lot of depth and a whole lot of talent, whether it's to the draft, to graduation, or still the question mark, which is up in the air. But somebody like this, because he's been off the bench at Mississippi State, you can then throw at him the idea of being able to come and be a starter at Auburn, when all of a sudden you're sitting there looking at it, rather than in 24 minutes where you average 11.7, you could get 27, 28 per average or on average per game, and you can continue to see that number rise, can score from the outside or get the ball from the outside and drive it in, doesn't again rely on the three, but the physicality and the rebounding, just the willingness to be that bully ball guy, is going to be very, very important for Auburn next year.
Yeah, some of these stats right here in terms of the numbers, these are from Nathan King at Auburn Undercover, good friend of the program, says that Murphy ranked number 6 in the SEC last season in overall player efficiency rating.
Wow.
He was number 5 in rebounding rate, which is what you were talking about, and number 5 in 2-point field goals made, all while being off the bench. So he, basically what that means, if you're not a basketball nerd like us, when he's on the floor, he produces.
He finds ways to impact the game.
Yeah, he produces.
You don't miss when he's on the floor.
Exactly. And so you bring that in for what you believe to be a starter on Auburn's front court next year, but you do have to go find somebody else. And it seems like this is always the case, but in this portal cycle in particular, seems like the guards are very there's much more guard movement than big man movement in the port, at least on the, I don't know, in the news and on social media and the announcements and things. Seems like the guards are just taking over the storylines right now, but Auburn goes and gets one of the best big men in the transfer portal, again, from right here in the SEC.
Well, that, and you go back into their first transfer portal edition, which was Keyshawn Hall, who is another forward, but they call him Big Guard just because of his mobility that he's able to create with his size and the length that he has. He's a perimeter player, that stereotypical stretch four that can go down and create down low, can get rebounds, but can also really space out the floor. Now you get one of those bully ball type of guys that loves being down low and loves battling for rebounds. The two additions so far, again, Keyshawn and Keyshawn, going to be a whole lot of fun to watch in Neville Arena next year.
And then you try to figure out, right, what Auburn's going to have coming back, or if they can have guys coming back. You still have Chad Baker, who's up in the air. You still have Todd Pettiford, who's up in the air. You hope that Tahad can come back, or he can. You hope that Tahad will come back.
Selfishly, yeah.
Yeah, selfishly. And look, I think he needs it.
I think another
year in college would do him wonders. And I think first round minimum, possible lottery pick for a guy like him with another good year of progression in the college game.
Yeah, you'd be competing for SEC Player of the Year.
I think so.
And I don't think that's a stretch to be able to say.
No, not at all. And so I think he'll do what you normally see, get some feedback, see what happens, see what the NBA says, which I think they're going to say, you still turn it over a little bit, you still have the ball stick, you still get stuck at times, still have some of those, quote, freshman rookie moments. Get those out of your system with another year and come back, and we'd love to have you, I think is how the NBA has to sell it.
Yeah, I don't think the NBA by any means goes, yeah, we didn't see you shoot well enough from the floor. We didn't see you enough in those big-time moments.
Yeah, you're not clutch enough. Yeah.
Exactly. That being said, in the tournaments, when he didn't necessarily play his best, it was because of those other things that kind of came along with the fact of back-to-back misses that almost felt like a turnover, and then maybe the freshman pass that you go through the motions, the pass that you make 1,000 times, but the one time that you don't put full emphasis on it, Florida or whoever is able to intercept it and turn it back over. But again, looking back at Keyshawn Murphy at some of the stats, I mean, average put up 18 and 11 against Alabama, 16 and 7 against Oklahoma, 18 and 13 against Florida, 16 and 9 against Missouri, 18 and 8 against Missouri the second time, 18, 11 and 3 against Ole Miss. So again, these aren't necessarily numbers, or they're not numbers at all against, you know, group of five competition. Again, this is a proven player that's played in the SEC for a couple of years, and so that 11.7 is not ballooned by a couple big games and then a couple fall-offs. I mean, this is about as consistent as you can get.
Look at how Auburn has quickly become a destination spot for big guys. I mean, in Bruce Pearl's time here, it's always been a destination spot for guards because we know how good Bruce Pearl has been in his entire coaching history with guards and developing guards and letting them play however they want to, shooting the basketball and making plays and solo ball and things like that. But Auburn under Bruce, and I think the coaching staff deserve a lot of credit here too, they've quickly become a destination spot for a guy like Keyshawn Hall, who is 6'10" and says, yeah, let me go play in that system because of what Jahni Broome just did in 2 years, and especially this year. Jahni Broome proved, and you can go back to an extent, an Austin Wiley or a Dangelle Purifoy or an Anthony McLemore and guys like that who have slowly built this reputation up for Auburn where it's like, man, you can be really good. You can be a big guy and be really successful at Auburn and then move on to the next level. While all those guys may not be playing in the bigs, Walker Kessler is. He's playing in the NBA. He's a starter for the Jazz, who are not very good, but he's a starter in the NBA. And you saw those guys go play overseas, then work their way in the G League, and now you have a guy like Walker Kessler playing in the NBA. Jahni Broome's going to try and give it a go. I mean, it has quickly become a place where big men want to be and can develop and move on to the next level, and that's going to help Auburn tremendously.
And you feel like it almost works. Basketball should work mentally the way that Bruce Pearl and Auburn has established it as of late. You almost kind of build up the guard reputation, so then all of a sudden it is the, all right, now big men in the transfer portal. Look at what we have. It's like a receiver in the transfer portal. The quarterbacks are the guards, right?
Yep.
You're sitting there going, all right, I could go to this school, I could go to this school and maybe get a little bit of action. That quarterback is pretty dang good, and he needs his go-to receiver. Huh. That's Auburn when it comes to basketball. You have all of those established point guards and shooting guards and the small forwards. Now you're able to pick and choose systematically who fits your system perfectly. A guy like Keyshawn Murphy is going to be so beneficial because he's not somebody that relies on the outside too much. He's just somebody that's comfortable being down low. Again, shooting 57% from the field last year in the SEC, where you get bodied and you get bullied and you get tackled every single time you have the basketball at the block. Somebody like this is going to be perfect.
We worried all year about what the offseason would look like and what the roster would look like next year for Auburn. They've gone to work quickly in the transfer portal. Keyshawn squared is what they've done so far, and they start, or I guess continue today, with Keyshawn Hall, the transfer from Mississippi State, or Keyshawn Murphy, rather, from Mississippi State. We are off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on Auburn and the transfer portal, basketball or football. We'll have some of that later on in the show. But when we come back, we're going to talk Auburn baseball, breaking down their series win over LSU and previewing a game tonight, a tricky midweek against Jack State. That's all coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Appreciate you being with us on a sunny, a beautiful day in the Auburn-Opelika area. And flip it over to baseball a little bit. We're going to have Auburn baseball's pitching coach, Everett Tiefer, join us coming up at 2:30. Really excited to have him on in what feels like an appropriate time, because Auburn baseball pitching, you could say, has been the reason they've won several games here as of late, taking down number 3 LSU, taking down Georgia Tech last week, and hopefully continuing that trend tonight against Jacksonville State on the road, and then against the number 1 team in the country, the Texas Longhorns in Austin this weekend.
Yeah, but this past weekend, Auburn baseball jumps into the top 10 unanimously following a 4-0 weekend, all against top 25 games. Again, the come-from-behind victory over Georgia Tech and then sweeping the series over LSU. And just figured we would kind of break down what happened in each of those three games, some of the things that we love, some things that we hope that they can continue to carry over. Coming into this series, LSU starters on the mound, their Friday, Saturday, and Sunday arms were 6-0, 5-0, and 5-1. I think that's pretty good, right?
I would say
16-1 combined through those three guys. I think it's halfway decent. Those lining up with some of the questions with Auburn's bullpen, you wondered how good of a test this could be execution-wise for Auburn, both at the plate and on the mound. Well, you go to game one, Auburn puts up 8 runs on 13 hits, 4 of those being extra base hits, and they all came at what felt like the perfect time. It was a single, a walk, and then a double, or a single, an error, and then a triple. You felt like every single time they needed that big hit, they were able to get it. Anderson, this Friday night starter, picks up his first loss of the year, and it's something that I talked about on Wednesday and Thursday and maybe even Tuesday last week. Get into the bullpen. If that's what you can do on Friday nights, it allows you to control the rest of the series. And I mean that from the standpoint of, if arms have to throw on Friday that necessarily might not be used to throwing on Friday, or they just have to come into the game a little bit earlier, you're either going to see them again later in the weekend, or they're completely burned for the entire weekend. That's exactly what Auburn did. Again, 8 runs on 13 hits. 8 of the 9 starters for Auburn had at least one hit in game one, and highlighting the 7th inning is the one that I want to hear in game one. LSU puts up 3. Auburn responds with 1. You still lose the inning, and again, you're still LSU, you feel like, still has the momentum. But it's the ability that I've talked about, those bounce back, those response innings, whether it's on the mound or it's at the plate, even just to be able to respond with 1. It salvages and takes away a whole lot of the momentum that LSU had, but it salvages the little bit of momentum that you still feel like you have, because it feels like those 3 runs, it feels like a whole lot less, because Auburn mentally just increased their lead, although they still lost the inning. Auburn puts up two crooked number innings on Friday night. If you can put up two or three in one game in those nine innings, you feel like you have a whole lot of confidence to get things done in game one.
Well, with that, it's because in a game in a series like that against LSU, or heck, even in a midweek against a team like Georgia Tech, who, remind you, is a top 25 team most of the time when Auburn played them last week, and you want to look at the ACC and say that they're bad, and I think that's a carryover from basketball. They got like five teams in the top 25. They're pretty good. Clemson, North Carolina, I think Louisville's still top 25 right now. So they're good. But in a game like that against Georgia Tech or a series like that against LSU, it really is one or two pitches that can determine a game. Like in a top 10 matchup, Auburn and LSU, the bullpen came in, and over the years in recent memory and even in early parts of this year, it was, man, we had a lead, and then it just didn't – it fell apart, right? But Auburn was able to get through and make the pitches. And what do we say all the time on our high school broadcast, Christian? It's, if you come into relief, what's your job? Throw strikes. Your job is to throw strikes. And that's what Auburn has done. They're not walking guys. They're not hitting batters. They're not giving up free bases and easy runs. Because if you do that in the SEC, a team like LSU – or Texas coming up this weekend will get you, and they will hammer you for it.
It definitely happened in game one. The bats were really the key part in game one. And then again, the bullpen coming in, not allowing those free passes or the hit-by-pitches, at least in game one. Game two, they were a little bit more. Auburn had four runs on seven hits, but Auburn still won at 4-2. You had two in the fourth and two in the fifth. You knocked the starter out of the game, and Johnson only goes five innings, who picks up his first loss of the year. Cade Fisher gets his best start of the season, goes five innings, three hits, one earned, and five Ks. And he got out of the bases loaded jam in the fourth, where Auburn was talking about pulling him. Yeah. All of a sudden, you get out. Then not only can he get you another out, he gets you a whole nother inning. And that's another thing with these Saturday, Sunday guys with Auburn, when you're going up against some of the top staffs in the nation, you don't feel like you have to beat them, but if you can match what they do when you're going toe-to-toe, no pun intended, on the same exact rubber on the same night, Cade Fisher does more than that, and again, allows him to get the win. It allows Auburn to keep that 4-2 lead. Armstrong and Hetzler finish it out, going the distance, only giving up one run, allows them to knock it out in game two, win the series. Then all of a sudden you move to game three. You wonder about the getaway day. Auburn's already won the series. Is it the possibility of a letdown game? Instead, what does Auburn do? In the home half of the first, they punch LSU in the mouth. They get two with a Cooper McMurray two-run double. You also get one in the second. Chase Storrs, the Sunday starter for LSU, only goes two innings for LSU. Granted, their guy in the middle innings went four and the other guy went two. So, again, some of those things about getting to the bullpen didn't necessarily work on Sunday, but Alvarez and Graves give you 7 1/3 of only two runs. They give up three hits combined. Dylan Watts slams the door on the series. Auburn wins it 3-2. The biggest concern in game three, the biggest thing that kept LSU even in the game, was there were seven walks for Auburn in game three, with only four in game one and two in game two. That being said, if the one thing you have to harp on from this series is, hey, in a game that we won 3-2, let's not flirt with fire too many times and put those free passes on, because eventually you're going to get burned. But how nice is that to be able to say after you sweep the number three team in the country?
Well, look at where Auburn has come from, right? Talking Auburn baseball, as we're going to have Everett Tiefer, the pitching coach, join us here in just a few minutes. You look at what Auburn was doing early in the season in non-conference play. They were hitting the lights out of the baseball. They were scoring 14 runs, 11 runs, 10 runs, 8 runs, 13 runs against Ohio State. But in some of those games, they were having to, right? They beat Oregon State 8-7. They had to beat, right, a team like Vanderbilt 7-6. They had to beat Alabama State 13-9. I mean, they had to do those things offensively because the pitching wasn't backing it up. But now the pitching is backing it up. And don't stress that the offense didn't score a ton of runs this weekend. You took on the number three team in the country. I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, again, in the SEC, you can't necessarily rely on 8 runs a game. But how nice is it this year rather than in years past where you feel like you're getting one of the two? Now it feels like more times than not you're getting a little bit of both. and it's enough to win you series or possibly sweep one of the best teams in the country.
Pitching has been the highlight for Auburn baseball. We'll talk to the man behind it, Everett Tiefert, the pitching coach for Auburn University Baseball. He joins us coming up next.
On the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader, continuing our weekly baseball interviews with Auburn baseball here on ESPN 106.7, and excited to have Coach Everett Tiefert, the pitching coach for Auburn baseball, joining us on the airwaves. And what a perfect time to bring him in, as this staff put together a marvelous performance this past weekend against the LSU Tigers. Coach, thank you so much for joining us here on ESPN. Man, a perfect time to bring you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Excited to be on here.
Well, there is just so much going on right now with Auburn baseball, and the season's just going by in the blink of an eye. 26-10 overall, 9-6 in conference play. We're in the middle of April, the smack middle of April, and I say this every week because it's true. I just don't know where the season's going. Man, it's flying by.
It is. It feels like we're just opening up, and like you said, we're halfway through conference, and it's amazing how fast the season does fly by. And so far, so good for the most part, and just keep grinding and show up every day trying to win a couple games.
Well, for you in particular, I want to go back to the beginning of the season, or even before the season, right? And you come in and you. Fairly new to this staff and still trying to, you know, figure things out here in the SEC and with Auburn in the college game, preferred to the professional side of things. And so really curious, right, on what your, I guess, your mindset or maybe the goals were for you and your pitching staff this season coming into 2025, because there were some question marks they've delivered so far, but want to know what kind of your goals and mindsets were coming into the season.
Yeah, I think as a staff being, you know, Coach Thompson, Coach Foxhall, and myself, as far as the pitching guys, we wanted to build a staff that was, you know, tougher might not be the best way to put it, but a little bit more resilient than maybe last year. It felt like when we got punched in the mouth, it really took us a while to get back off the mat. And, you know, we made practices and inter squads harder. We used one of the things we did that I felt like was something that was beneficial was we used an automated strike zone. We didn't have umpires, so we made the strike zone kind of black and white and made it pretty tough on them. And I think, you know, kind of recapping, 2024, we felt like we just needed to make, you know, practices and inter squads and everything just a little more difficult to try to build up their resiliency. And I think you've seen that this year. And you know, we've handled our ups and downs, haven't been perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but you talk about, you know, last weekend and it was definitely not pretty at times, but we made some really big pitches. And I think I attribute that to all the hard work that the guys put in the fall, being in tougher positions and they were able to handle that. So I think, you know, this year's group is very determined, very focused. And you know, it's been a fun group to work with, and I think we still haven't pitched our best baseball yet, and hopefully it's coming here soon.
Well, if that's the case, the SEC and the rest of college baseball better watch out, because a top 10 Auburn team who just swept LSU, and you hear that, Auburn fans, they're not even pitching their best yet, so you better watch out across the SEC. And it's really, really neat for me to talk to somebody like you who has so much experience across the sport of baseball and playing professionally and being able to see guys pitch and you pitch at such the highest of levels. I'm curious on what the difference is to you versus what you see at high-level college ball here in the SEC versus what you saw in the pros and what you were scouting against in the pros and things like that. What's the biggest difference in an SEC pitcher versus a major league pitcher, and I guess what it takes to go from one to the other?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just consistency. Coach Thompson was talking about it yesterday. I mean, a lot of these guys have the same – stuff, if not, I mean, arguably better stuff than some guys at the big league level. But, you know, being able to handle the game, being able to handle the pressure, doing the little things, that's kind of the biggest separator. You know, I had been in some draft rooms leading up to coming to Auburn, and everybody talked about he was in the SEC and, like, you know, looked at it as a huge, you know, feather in their cap and what that really meant. You understood it because the baseball's so good and the players are so good. But just the meat grinders that these kids go through playing every weekend. You know, we had a good weekend against LSU, and you can't sleep on it because you go to number one Texas. Like, you just can't stop. And I think it builds a tough kid that can handle ups and downs. You know, but there still are the inconsistencies, you know, maybe pitch to pitch or inning to inning that you don't see with major league guys quite as much. So it's really just being consistent, and being consistent in your daily work, I would say, is the biggest thing, in the attention to detail. But, you know, a lot of these kids aren't far off, and you see it with Skeens and guys going, you know, to the big leagues really fast that have come through this league. So it's you know, there are definitely differences, but I think this league prepares them as best as any league they're going to run through. So I think they're getting a huge advantage, whether they know it or not right now, versus, you know, maybe being in another conference.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about that with football, and that conversation's growing with basketball, and I know it's that way in softball, but baseball, I mean, specifically, you're battle-tested. You're playing the best baseball in the country at the college level, and then moving into, you know, the minors and eventually work your way into the pros. I mean, it doesn't get any better than playing in the SEC for college-level baseball to prepare you for what you're going to see at the professional level, and that's what Auburn's doing right now, running through the SEC. As we talk with Everett Tiefert, Auburn baseball pitching coach, here on ESPN 106.7, and this has been an exciting season, and it, not even up and down, just been a constant up, I think, where you start off your SEC series with Vanderbilt, get the wins there. You beat Kentucky and Lexington, which I think is quickly becoming a bigger win than people made it out to be. Tough loss against Georgia on the road, but all you've done since then, you turn around and beat Bama, Georgia Tech in the midweek, and you sweep LSU. What's it been like for you and the guys over the past couple of weeks to get all these wins here recently?
Yeah, I mean, you want to start strong. I mean, I think that was our issue last year. You know, we kind of faced our tough meat grinder that we're in right now, right out of the chute. I think our first five series were against top six opponents last year. So yeah, getting off to a great start is huge. And you talk about the one thing I think, at least personally, I'm most proud of is how our guys responded after Georgia. Because at least on the mound, you know, we had a couple bad innings that really hurt us. But for the most part, that offense is really good. And at their place, they play really well. They know how to play in that ballpark. We were competitive. There were times last year when we weren't competitive. And our kids, you know, to their credit, went into a good environment and really held their own. I mean, you know, I think we all can say we probably wish we would have walked out of there at least with one. And we had one in hand. Didn't happen, and it's baseball. But our guys really were able to move on and bounce back from that. I thought we did a nice job with Alabama, who was a great offense coming in here. And yeah, you know, we had one bad inning at Georgia Tech that made the game pretty close. They had a tough first inning, so maybe it was a push on the bad innings. But you know, that's a sneaky good win, especially against, you know, a team that's top five in the country in batting average. And then, you know, like I said, LSU, I felt like we had a good plan and the kids, you know, executed. So getting off to a great start was really paramount. Coach Thompson talked about it all the time, you know, kind of grabbing some momentum and hoping to run with it. And I feel like we've kind of done that. And now we're in a position where we just can't, you know, rest on what we've done. And this league doesn't let you. So we got to keep showing up every day and you know, take nothing for granted and keep on grinding.
And the highlight of that was the sweep over number 3 LSU at Plainsman Park this past weekend, holding LSU to 4 runs, 2 runs, and 2 runs. And this stat from George Nunnally, shout out to him for all the amazing stats and him always getting these interviews set up for us each and every week. Your pitching staff turned in, and this is from George, a 2.67 ERA against LSU, says it's the lowest ERA in a 3-game SEC series since posting a 1.33 ERA against Tennessee back in 2020. 2019. So you're looking at 6 years in a three-game span with a 2.67 ERA, the lowest that your staff has put up. And I know you've been here the shorter amount of time, but that's an impressive number. 2.67 against the number three team in the country over the weekend. That's pretty impressive, Coach.
Yeah, you know, and all the credit obviously goes to our kids. And I think, you know, the one great thing about this group is that they're not satisfied. I know I said it earlier that I don't think we've put everything together yet, but, you know, we always recap the weekends on Monday, and you can kind of, you know, they were like, man, if I could have been a little bit better at this, if I could have been a little bit better at that, like really dissecting, you know, themselves and, you know, trying to put everything together and keep everything in context. But yeah, if you would have said we were going to give up, you know, 8 runs all weekend, I think all the pitching staff would have taken that. And like I said, it was big pitches. Sunday wasn't perfect, but we made some huge, huge pitches. Fish getting out of the fifth on Saturday with the bases loaded was a massive win for him. So yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of how the guys handled everything this weekend. And, you know, hopefully that leads into our game tonight against Jacksonville State and then in Austin.
And so with that game coming up with Jack State tonight, again, we're talking with Everett Tiefert, Auburn pitching coach here on ESPN 106.7. Jack State tonight on the road, tricky midweek game away from Plainsman Park. And then you mentioned it, you're going to Austin against the number one team in the country. And something that has stood out to me all season long are the young guys. You have sophomores and freshmen, coach, that you're putting out there, including what we expect to be Christian Chatterton tonight, who will get the start, I think, against Jack State tonight. I mean, speak to the confidence you have, and not just the older guys, but those young puppies in there who have yet to break, really, who go in every time and get the job done, whether it's LSU or sometimes here in the midweek. I mean, you got some really, really good players who have a lot of years left in them.
No doubt. Our freshmen, and to your point, the sophomores, you know, Griffin Graves making some really nice strides, Cam Tilley making strides. You know, I'm sure I'm missing somebody, but yeah, I mean, the young kids have grown at a rate that I think, you know, I think all the staff would say we're extremely excited and happy about. You know, they kind of came in with, you know, very mature and understood what we were asking of them. And, you know, we kind of laid it out like, hey, what's going to get you on or off the field is your command. You know, Butch talks about it all the time, 60% strikes. That's the one thing we're putting in front of their face all the time. Because they had the talent. They've got the arm talent. They got the stuff. It's just, you know, a huge jump going from a high school strike zone with a high school hitter to, you know, the big boy conference with big boy umpires that don't give you anything off the plate. So they've done a phenomenal job. You know, every day they come ready to work and are eager to learn. And it's just been a fun group that I hopefully will be a group that really keeps this program, you know, moving for a long time, because they'll pass down all their knowledge to the next group. And then it kind of just keeps rolling. But, yeah, we'll go with Chatterton tonight. Alvarez, you know, pitched on Sunday and did a nice job getting us off into the game. And he's got some things to grow with, but you can obviously see the talent there. Sanders has been awesome against left-handed batters. We've got to get a couple things kind of clicking on, you know, when he faces righties, but he's been awesome. So it's really been a fun group to watch grow and continue to learn and develop.
Auburn baseball at Jacksonville State tonight. That's a 6 o'clock first pitch. Pregame will start at 5:45 over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, for the radio broadcast. And then a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. The SEC slate shifts a little bit. Believe that is the first Thursday, Friday, Saturday series of SEC play, as you take on the number one team in the country in Austin, the Texas Longhorns. Coach, what's the mindset going into it? I know there's so much conversation of take the numbers away, take the ranking away. It's another SEC opponent on the road, but you go up against one of the best teams in college baseball, especially on the offensive side. What's the scouting report for the Longhorns as you go into that series this weekend?
You know, I think, and I know it's cliche, but it's really just focusing on what we need to do. Control count, put guys away, hold runners well, do the little things. You know, they're a really good offense. You know, it's a balanced attack. You know, I think they've got some areas that we can exploit, but you know, we got to go out and do our job and execute those pitches They got a really good pitching staff, so runs are going to be at a premium. So how do we handle that when we know, you know, they're going to be run out of a bunch of really good arms that our hitters have to face? And I know our hitters will be up for the challenge and try to grind out at bats and really just, you know, focus on their at bat quality. But you know, it's a good team, and the Jacksonville State game tonight is big. We've really tried not to talk about Texas over the past, you know, 48 hours, because Jacksonville State's a really quality club. They run a lot. They've got a lot of athleticism. Their lineup is deep. It's not necessarily a place where the talent or the numbers totally fall off. So they run out 9 really quality hitters. So we got to be prepared for tonight, we'll be a little bit sad on the bus after the game. So we got to come prepared, but it'll be a fun week of baseball. That's why you come to Auburn, right? To play really good teams and really good environments. So we're excited.
That's right. Spoken like a true coach. Don't overlook anybody, not in college baseball, man. Anything can happen on any given night. Auburn at Jack State tonight, 6 o'clock, and then at No. 1 Texas Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. All of those games and the radio broadcast will be on our sister station, Wings 94.3. Everett Tiefert, Auburn pitching coach, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. Man, it's been so much fun to have you on, and we really appreciate the time and the conversation. Safe travels to Jack State tonight and then to Austin this weekend, my friend.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Coach Tiefert for joining us here on the show today, talking about the Auburn baseball pitching staff. And, man, I mean, they have continued to be the story for Auburn so far, and hopefully they continue to be the story in the positive light, the positive way. Tonight, as Auburn is on the road taking on Jacksonville State, midweek game on the road, not against a power opponent, right? It's not an ACC team or anything like that. It's not Georgia Tech like where you went, but you've been, I mean, Auburn goes to Samford at times, you've been to UAB, you go to South Alabama, and now you're playing at Jacksonville State. And you heard him there, he said, look, we're not overlooking Jack State. He said right there, we've done a pretty good job at not looking ahead to Texas, because these are those games, we talk about them all the time, Christian. It's the midweek one-off scenarios with in-state opponents where they're going to throw their guy, they're going to give you everything you want, and if you don't play well, you will lose.
Yeah, I mean, you're 4-2 against your in-state, by no means rivals, but against in-state opponents, not including Alabama, so far this year. And so again, especially going on the road, it adds a little bit more fuel to the fire for the team that is at home, this being Jacksonville State, just because they're in that familiar territory, you're on that normal clock, you're welcoming in a much bigger team where you have a chance to show out in front of your fans, in front of your school, and to find a way to make them proud. Auburn is 18-5 at home this year. They're 5-0 in neutral site games. They're 3-5 on the road. And again, a big number of that is because of what happened in Athens with those 3 losses. But that being said, you're still 3-5. And so 4 games on the road this week, including Jacksonville State tonight, and the team is the number one team in the country in Texas. That being said, how nice is it to be able to hear coaches say, yeah, it's on the horizon, but we're not there yet. We still have things that we need to take care of tonight. You saw it a couple weeks ago where you didn't necessarily play the way that you were hoping in the midweek, and it showed in the weekends. Now you have the chance to continue that hot streak, continue to get things right, continue to build momentum both at the plate, on the mound, and in the field before you head to Austin.
Yeah, so that'll be coming up tonight. Auburn baseball taking on Jacksonville State. That will be aired over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, so be sure you tune in for that. Andy Burch and Brad Law have the call down there in Jacksonville. First pitch set for 6 o'clock tonight. Pregame will begin at 5:45, and then you can hear the entire series Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Remember that, Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the Texas series. You have a couple of those in SEC play. I believe you have 2 of them every year. Have this one, and then you'll have the one at the end of the year as well. So that's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series against Texas, and we're going to bring on somebody who knows a little bit about this Texas program, huh, over there in Austin to start hour number 2.
Yeah, a good buddy of mine joining us. He is the The senior graphic designer. We brought him on a couple times throughout the year when Texas football was hosting the first round of the playoffs. Able to get some thoughts about that. Also brought him on a couple weeks before that, just talking about Texas in year one in the SEC and going to the SEC championship. And so we figured no time or no better time to bring him on than right here before Auburn and Texas goes at it.
Yeah, Aiden Smith will be joining us to start hour number two. We'll also talk a little bit more Auburn basketball transfer portal things, and then there's already some football portal news as well, and we're going to have all of that coming up for you in hour number two, so be sure, stick around. First hour's in the books. We'll have a whole lot more in the next 60 minutes here on ESPN 106.7 on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can catch up with the podcast version of the show. We take the audio from the show, put it on our station website for you at ESPNAU.com, and you can catch up with that because in hour number one, we talked about some of the Auburn basketball portal news as they've already picked up one and Keyshawn Hall. They pick up another Keyshawn with Keyshawn Murphy from Mississippi State, who will most likely be a starting front court player for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers. So we discussed that in hour number one. Plus, broke down the Auburn series versus LSU, the sweep over LSU as the Tigers get ready to take on Jacksonville State this weekend, or I guess Jacksonville State tonight, and then Texas this weekend. And we had Auburn's pitching coach, Auburn University pitching coach Tieford, joined us in that first hour as well to talk about the emergence of the pitching staff and how they've just been really, really good here in SEC play. So all of that was in hour number one. And again, you can catch up with that on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, going to start it off with a little bit of Auburn, Texas baseball talk. Again, got a guy in there that knows quite a little bit about the Texas Longhorns. We've brought him in a couple times talking with Texas joining the SEC and then Texas being able to host the first round playoff game on the college football side of things, but being able to talk with him. Also going to talk a little bit more regarding the Auburn basketball transfer portal, any other names that stand out, any other positions that Auburn feels like they really want to fill. Again, you have both Keyshawns now, but any other spots right now that you feel like you want to get more comfortable with, again, with Tahad Pettiford still testing the NBA waters, with Chad Baker Mazzara still having the option of coming back, still no confirmation on either of those things as well. Keeping the portal talk, but switching back to the gridiron in just a little bit. Auburn transfer portal football news with a couple of guys entering their names or expecting to enter their names into the transfer portal. All of that coming up here in hour number two. And before we get into content in hour number two, we want to remind you that the second hour of our show each and every day is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour here on the Line on ESPN 106.7. And on the phone lines, joining us from the University of Texas, making his walk around the Texas football stadium, Aiden Smith, the senior graphic designer for Texas Athletics. Man, thanks for spending your time, getting able to hop on a little bit. I know that you're out there pumping out the graphics as Texas baseball, the number one team in the country.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited to be back on the phone with you guys and talking some baseball. It's going to be a really fun series. I'm really excited for it. Both teams seem to be playing some of their best baseball right now, so that obviously makes for a really good weekend series.
Yeah, top 10 matchup, number 1 versus number 8. You're looking at kind of the Texas SEC series so far. They swept Mississippi State on the road. They then won 2 of 3 at home against LSU. You swept at Missouri. Then you swept Georgia at home, which I know is a very big series that we talked about off the air, but also was able to, again, just fear so much about, again, that being one of the best series in college baseball so far this year. And then coming off of your 2 of 3 winning the series at the University of Kentucky, what can you talk to us about what the Longhorns are looking like right now, whether it's at the plate, whether it's on the mound? What are you really liking that you're seeing that gives you confidence with the number one team in the country?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, that's 5 straight SEC series wins in a row. And if you go down the history, actually, where 11 conference series in a row have been won, obviously stretching back to last year when we were in the Big 12. So Longhorns are on a really good hot streak right now, and a lot of that is due to our pitching. I want to give Matt Wiener, our pitching coach, like the most flowers that I possibly can. He's proving to be one of the most valuable assistant coaches in baseball right now. So when you're going to look at this and watch these games, pay attention to how our pitchers are doing. Our star freshman Dylan Volantis is killing it right now. And, you know, specifically that Georgia series that you're talking about, definitely our best showing pitching-wise. We only pitched 5 pitchers that entire series.
Wow.
And kept Georgia one of the best offenses to only 8 runs the entire series as well. Previously, they were averaging 10.5 runs a game. So to hold them to that is that's something that we want to pay attention to for sure. Is how long can this pitching staff actually keep the gas going?
Hey, this is Jacob talking with you, Aiden, here on ESPN 106.7. Happy to have you on, and I know Christian's had you on a couple of times when I was on the road doing some different things. But you look at Texas and what Auburn gets to bring to Austin there for the first time in SEC play, maybe the first time Auburn's ever been to Austin for baseball. And I'm curious on what you expect the fan turnout to be. I mean, yes, it's the number one team in the country. It's SEC baseball. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But then you bring in a top 10 team like Auburn. I mean, do you expect the fans to be a huge part of this series on Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Oh, absolutely. The fan turnout has been honestly night and day when you compare what it was last season. I think everybody's really excited with this new staff, and rightfully so, with us being ranked at the top now this week. So I expect a lot of people to be in town for this Easter weekend, and naturally they want to go to see some good baseball and some good weather. Not to mention, like you said, it is a top 10 matchup. So, yeah, that'll play a huge factor.
What's something we can expect, again, with Auburn fans that are tuning in right now that haven't necessarily paid too much attention to this Texas team? You mentioned the pitching staff coming up really big as of late, but what can you talk to us about this team as a whole? Where a couple guys that they rely on, who are their motors, and a couple of those big names that Auburn fans should look out for this weekend?
Yeah, I mentioned Dylan Volantis a second ago. He's our star freshman pitcher. He's won, I shouldn't say won, but he's earned the honor of two SEC Freshman of the Weeks so far this season. I believe his ERA is sitting at 1.15, so he's throwing some gas right now, and he's doing amazing for us. Pitched twice in that Georgia series as part of those 5 pitchers that threw as a whole. And when you talk about our entire bullpen, he's not the only guy. I think our team ERA as a bullpen is averaging at around 3. So obviously we have some guys that can throw, and we're both of our teams are playing the best baseball. And when you pair that with Auburn's offense, it should be a really, really interesting matchup for us to see what happens.
Texas so far this season, 29-5 overall, 13-2 in SEC play, which is, of course, top of the conference as the number one team in the country. And, I mean, with this Longhorns team, it seems like, I mean, baseball, they've adjusted just fine. And I know we've had this conversation with you and other sports, but just as this first transition year right in the Southeastern Conference, have you seen any hiccups or anything that's been truly different from what the Big 12 was to what the SEC's been for the Longhorns?
I mean, I don't think anybody was – everybody knew that this new baseball staff was going to be, you know, better than the previous one, but I don't think they expected the turnaround to be nearly as quick. I mean, we were – the Big 12 baseball has not been very good. I mean, we weren't faring very well at all last year, and they weren't a very good conference last year. So to be able to come into a very good baseball conference in the SEC and to be able to be 5-0 in conference play, you know, it's special, and I think it's a testament to how well they've been able to coach and recruit. So we'll see how long they can keep it up. I mean, I think everybody knows it's pretty much impossible to be undefeated series wise and in the SEC conference. So we'll see which one of those series ends up actually being the one that we drop, because there's going to be one in there, and I think Auburn will prove to be a very good opponent.
We were talking with Coach Tiefer, the Auburn pitching coach, here just a little bit ago, and saying that they're not quite looking towards Texas. Auburn has Jacksonville State tonight. I know y'all have a midweek as well, and then Auburn this weekend. So you don't want to look too far into the calendar. But I have to ask you, not necessarily with the SEC season or the slate coming up this weekend, but the schedule for the weekend following, where y'all host Texas A&M. I know that there's a little bit of history there on the baseball side of things with the head coach hopping over from the Aggies to the Longhorns. What can you expect from just a series like that? Again, the rivalry kind of reinstated. Now you feel like you have even more on the line. Texas playing their best baseball throughout the entire year. Texas A&M kind of coming out of the ground, really playing their best baseball. It feels like they've found it. What can you tell us about whether or not the fans have talked about it all, the office has talked about it all, or even just the players? Because I know it's going to be a very, very heated series.
I mean, a little bit of history is certainly a way to put it, that's for sure. No, we're really, really excited about that series. I think an interesting tidbit, like as an athletic department, we've coming up on being really close to clinching the Lone Star Showdown as a whole, should tennis come through this weekend. But yeah, I mean, as far as baseball goes, I think this is going to be our biggest series. You know, obviously it's not the Texas A&M is playing their best baseball, getting a lot better right now, but they're not going to be the best team that we've played this season. But it's going to prove how well can we manage our emotions as a team, how well can the coaching staff manage their emotions and like manage that with the team as well. It's really going to show like how strong we are and how far we'll be playing into June. So that's going to be a huge series for us. And I can imagine that A&M fans are going to be traveling every single day for that and probably like staying in Austin just to be at every single one of those games. So it should be a really interesting emotional series for these teams.
Texas 13-2 in conference, Auburn 9-6. Texas 16-3 at home, Auburn 3-5 at home. Does one of those things give, or does one of those things stay the same? We will find out this weekend. Aiden, thanks so much for hopping on and joining us. Before we let you go, again, I know you're plugging out all of the graphics for Texas baseball and all of Texas athletics. I know you got a little graphics page going on in there as well. Where can everybody find you? What should they go look up and see some of those graphics?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you letting me do a shout out. My page is _asmith2 on both Twitter and Instagram. And I'll be reposting a lot of my stuff and hoping that I'll take a couple of photos here during the weekend series against Auburn as well. It's like I said, it's going to be a really fun series, and just really happy to be involved with the team the way that I am. So excited to see that showing.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you once again for hopping on. We'll definitely be in touch throughout the week, and maybe a couple graphics with Auburn with a little bigger score than Texas maybe coming up this weekend. that might not make too many fans in Austin, but again, man, thank you for coming on, and enjoy your week and enjoy the weekend as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Aiden Smith, the senior graphic designer for Texas Athletics. I mean, Jacob, it's what set out to be a fantastic series. You feel like with Auburn, you were testing the waters with how good you really are with LSU coming to town. Now you get to do it with not only one of the top teams, labeled as the top team in the country, and you have to do it on the road. So a really, really big test for this Auburn team coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know how many Auburn fans are going to be making that trip to Austin, but I'm jealous of the ones that are. I mean, that's going to be a really cool series to be a part of, and tough to get there on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then, of course, Easter coming up this weekend. But for any Auburn fans, I know we have some that live in Texas that listen to the show and the station, and so for anybody that is going to that series, man, take some photos, send them in. We'd love to see what that crowd looks like this weekend. You heard Aiden's there talking about, appreciate him hopping on with us, about the fan support for Texas baseball and the difference that a year makes with a new manager and new coach, I should say. New coach and a new staff and new players. I mean, the turnaround has been significant for Texas, and sounds like the fans are showing up on a pretty consistent basis, and you would expect them to do that with another top 10 matchup there in Austin this weekend.
Again, it feels like college baseball is continuing to be on the rise, doing a little bit of a history check. Auburn, 1-0 in their career playing Texas.
Undefeated, baby.
Undefeated.
Never lost.
1995. Auburn 4, Texas 2. Hopefully history can continue to repeat itself.
Undefeated, never lost. Never lost. Well, hey, we appreciate him joining us to get the hour started. We'll take our first break in hour number two. Talk a little bit more of Auburn basketball transfer portal news. In case you missed that, we'll talk some more about the addition Bruce Pearl made today. And then some football portal news coming up, as well as some names have started to enter the portal or plan to enter the transfer portal. That's all coming up here in hour number two on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7 and talking some more transfer portal basketball news as the portal window is back open, and it's been open for a little bit, but there was the dead period, right? That ran from April 4th until April 10th. I can't remember if it was April 4th that it opened up, but I know that it was done on April 10th, which meant teams could still contact players and players could still talk to teams. They just couldn't take any visits or anything. And so since that's been done, there's a ton of news going around right now. And the one with Auburn is the fact that two major additions have been added for Auburn in the transfer portal. Keyshawn Squared. You have one Keyshawn from UCF. You have another from Mississippi State. But the one today is Keyshawn Murphy from Mississippi State, who is going to be a starting front court player for Auburn. Don't know if he's going to be a center or a four. Most likely a four, I think, just kind of looking at it for now, from my opinion. But I think that also depends, Christian, on who you get else in the transfer portal.
Exactly. I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of it still comes back to some of the answers that you don't necessarily have answered quite yet. Is Chad Baker-Mazzara going to come back? And if he does, would he play that two, the three, or would he even play a little bit of the point guard position? Do some of these other guys have opportunities to return that you still haven't had the confirmation about? What type of lineup are you trying to primarily run? Is Keyshawn Murphy going to be your Jani Broom-esque player if you can get somebody like Dylan Cardwell? Although Keyshawn Murphy plays a little bit more of that Dylan Cardwell physicality role, just with a little bit more natural scoring. But again, there's so many different ways that you could play it. You could put Keyshawn Hall, the UCF transfer that you're mentioning, you could play him as a smaller four or a bigger three. So many different mismatches that you can go after. The biggest thing that you're continuing to see is guys that have a bunch of height and a bunch of length that can get out and guard perimeter defense, but also they don't feel like it's a total mismatch down low. Kind of that Chaney Johnson type guy. Or again, even Dylan Cardwell, where he's able to get off on screens, and any other time you're looking at it, oh, it's a big mismatch. It's a small guard on a five, but you're seeing Dylan and his ability to guard height and size is continuing to be more and more important. You feel like big guards that you're able to have, or just big teams in general, create a little bit more success, especially in this SEC where it's more and more physical, what feels like every single year. So getting those first two pieces of the puzzle, you feel like answered initially a whole lot of questions. Now you're kind of waiting to see which guys are making that return, which guys are still going to pursue their name in the draft, and then you kind of go from there to determine which final piece of the puzzle, whether you go for somebody that's a little bit taller and can play that stereotypical center role, or if you just try and fill in the key pieces with some of those other guys possibly in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that Auburn was involved with Keyshawn Murphy when he was a high schooler in 2021. I mean, Auburn was in the mix to get him as a high school recruit. Just didn't happen. But you land him, and now you pair him with Keyshawn Hall, who I think is going to be your three. I think that's where you stand right now. If in a perfect scenario for right now, it would be for me Tahad Pettiford at your one. It'd be Chad Baker at your two. It'd be Keyshawn Hall, your three. And then Keyshawn Murphy, either the four or the five. Again, depending on if you can snag a seven-footer in the portal or something like that.
Is Bashir coming off the bench then for you? Or would you have him play the two and then you kind of move those other guys
down?
Yeah,
and I think, you know, just speaking from a gut feeling, I don't have any insight here. I just think there's probably a better chance. I've forgotten about Bashir. I think he... Is it crazy to say that there's a better chance of him starting there than Chad Baker coming back or having the opportunity to come back or the grant to come back? I mean, there's a lot of that that's still up in the air. So you either have Chad Baker and Bashir comes off the bench with starter-type minutes, or Chad doesn't come back, and yeah, then Bashir starts there. Plus, you've got your freshmen coming in too, who I think are going to be really, really good also. But again, a perfect world, I would have Tahad at your one. I'd put Keyshawn Hall at your three, and then Keyshawn Murphy's either going to be the four or the five if you can get a true center. If you have to play two big fours, that's not the end of the world. That's not a bad thing, as long as they are able to defend and run the floor, which I think Murphy does very, very well. I think he's not a liability in transition. You go back and watch some of his film, he's actually somebody you can rely on to hustle back and get back on the other end of the floor on both sides, but definitely offensively, you think of, oh, he's 6'10", you know, 220 or whatever he is. It's like, oh, well, he's never going to get back and be a threat offensively in transition. No, not Keyshawn Murphy. He's one of the first ones down the floor. He's one that you can also throw the ball to, and he isn't butterfingers and will actually catch it and actually make a play, which I think is a huge advantage for Auburn if you have the guards that you think you're going to have.
Right, and exactly. It goes right back to the part of the ability to be a natural scorer where you are comfortable on either block. You've seen it, again, in the SEC is one of those such a crucial thing of if you're averaging right around a double-double in the SEC, means you're doing something right, especially as a guy who's 6'10". But is it crazy to say that that's almost a little bit undersized for one of those stereotypical centers, which is what we're talking about, the discussion of possibly trying to find somebody bigger or playing a little smaller but a more physical lineup? But Keyshawn Murphy averaging almost 12 points per game, and again, that is consistent in the SEC, where you also see him get up to 18 points per game. Feels confident at both wings, can shoot the corner three if needed, has a little bit of a jump shot on the low block or in the short corner, but again, the ability to get the ball down low has always been one of the most important factors for Auburn as a basketball team. Now all of a sudden, you have a guy like that that feels comfortable, and then you have the guards that you feel like can just shoot it from lights out, shooting it from the three.
And don't forget also Elijah Freeman, somebody I don't think we have talked about on the air here. He is a D2 transfer who is really, really talented. He's from Lincoln Memorial. It's a Division II program. He's 6'8", averaged 19 points a game and almost 9 rebounds a game as a three type of player. He could be a two, but more likely a three. Big time programs as in Auburn, Tennessee, Indiana, those types of places have either gotten visits from him or trying to get visits with him. And as far as I know, as of today, Auburn's still in the mix for a guy like him. And I don't know if you would bring in a D2 player as a starter, but you bring him in as a key role player. And 19 points a game is no joke. I don't care where you play basketball. And so
Basketball doesn't get smaller and the rim doesn't get bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And so you bring in somebody like that, if Auburn's able to land him, to be a role player, to be somebody not just a minutes eater, but somebody who can score for you in those 15, 20 minutes a game.
Again, you go back to look at the Chaney Johnson role. That's a perfect addition coming from the D2 level that can give you 6 points and six rebounds or could give you 15 points if needed. There's still so many options that Auburn has, and so you feel like it's such a benefit and such a good spot to be in, and that's why so much credit goes to this coaching staff to be able to get the guys that they know they need to replace, the guys that they know they need to fill some of those holes. Now you can almost play a little bit of the waiting game, have those conversations. Obviously, you're waiting for Tahad Pettiford. There's not a likely chance, but, I mean, you're still throwing the names of guys like Denver Jones in there who has the opportunity because of the NCAA, the waiver wire with the Diego Pavia rule from starting at the D2 or the JUCO level. His is kind of the least likely, but you, with everything in the college game now, you don't feel like it's the end of the world to say that there's possibilities of where something like that could happen.
Another name that Auburn fans were monitoring that is no longer to be monitored is Lamar Wilkerson, the Sam Houston shooting guard, top 15 scorer in the country, averaged over 20 points a game, shot it at like 44% from downtown, was supposed to be visiting Auburn this week and had Indiana and Kentucky and Ole Miss all on that list. He visited Indiana this past weekend. I think he visited Lexington or was going to, had visits scheduled for Oxford and Auburn, canceled those, and committed to Indiana earlier today. So Auburn no longer going to get a visit, no longer on the board. Obviously, he has committed to Indiana. So that was one that Auburn would have loved to have brought in. I think he had a year of eligibility left. And so Auburn is no longer in on that one, but you have Keyshawn Squared, Keyshawn Hall and Keyshawn Murphy coming in on the basketball side of things. But there's some portal news on the football side with a couple of guys who have planned on entering the portal. We'll talk about those, plus what Auburn could be doing when it officially opens. We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Here on ESPN 106.7, I'm your man Jacob Goetz. He is Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. And we've been talking a lot of portal stuff today with basketball, but want to flip over to the football news because Auburn has had a couple of guys announced that they are going to be entering the transfer portal. And with that window coming up, and there's so many there's so many storylines flying around, not just with Auburn in particular, Christian, but just the transfer portal as a whole. I mean, we got an update on the Nico situation where you have teams who are pulling out of the Nico, what is it, sweepstakes, if you will. I mean, you got Tulane said, nah, we're good. North Carolina said, nah, we're good. And I don't know if Nico – we're going to talk Auburn in a second, but I don't know if Nico's going to go anywhere.
There's legitimate talks of five or six colleges that said, oh, we're kind of interested, but we'll wait. We'll wait to see if his offer basically is a renegotiation, and the number that a couple of those schools have thrown around is something like $1 million, which is very comical considering he was making $2 million at Tennessee. And so they're sitting there going, yeah, when all of this backfires and you have to try and claw your way back, we'll give you half of what you were initially asking for rather than double. Stand strong, college football.
Stay strong. It's working.
It is working. Make the Nico the example. And this has nothing to do with him on the field or anything regarding that, but just we talked a lot about it yesterday, was if you let it get out of hand and you give somebody like that exactly what they're wanting, when college football players have already had the most control that they've ever had in any sort of situation, it's just going to get completely 100% worse. You feel like if something like this happens the way that we talked a lot about it yesterday, you feel like you can slowly start to have that resolve. And then all of a sudden you get to the revenue sharing and the contracts, which you feel like are just moments away until somebody actually has the brain to be like, hey, let's make sense of this and let's go ahead and do what needs to be done. But so many crazy things going on right now. So, yes, Tulane, North Carolina have both backed out after being initial front runners. UCLA hasn't necessarily said anything. But even more coaches that aren't necessarily in the conversation for Nico are speaking out in their press conferences about this is not how things are done. Marcus Freeman, the Notre Dame head coach, is the most recent one on some – I forget which interview it was, but he basically said something along the lines of transactional needs are not going to be the best needs that you have as a college athlete. And so a head coach saying something like that speaks volumes, because it doesn't mean that – again, by no means are we sitting here going, they should not get paid, they should never be able to do anything. But when you're able to set a little bit of limits – and put some sort of control into a program and into a sport that has been so passionate and so faithful with everything that they've done, all of a sudden it could very easily get even more out of hand than where it's even at right now.
Well, we'll flip over to Auburn, as it's been the defensive side of the football that we've seen several pieces of news with the transfer portal. And before we do, got to shout out our guy Andy, our very loyal listener, who big fan of the show. We're big fans of him. Always, not always, but stopping by very frequently, it seems, and able to bring us these energy, they're like energy refreshment drinks almost, and they get you going, man. This one's called a Daisy Duke is the flavor of it. It's like a sweeter, it's pink in color, and it's just like a sweeter fruit type of thing. It's got some, I don't really know what's in it. I think there's a lot jumped in this thing, but it's awesome. Tastes delicious, gets us going, gets us through the rest of the show. So shout out to Andy, very loyal listener and friend of ours, and we appreciate him stopping by.
Yeah, we are now going to, on the line is usually from 2 to 4. We're now going to about 2 to 4 a.m. because of this. We now have more than what is needed to get us through the rest of hour number 2.
That's right. Well, shout out, Andy. We appreciate you, my friend. And so the transfer portal for football does not open technically until tomorrow on Wednesday. Crazy. I know, but it's wild how these guys just like, you know, I think I intend to enter the portal, and I don't think I want to be contacted. I think I'm okay. I think I'm just going to figure it out, and then all of a sudden I have a new home. Crazy how that works, right? Well, Auburn has seen three names who plan to enter the transfer portal from the defensive side of the football, where you have Terrence Love, who is a safety, who will be entering the portal. J.C. Hart has decided, the corner, to enter the portal. And C.J. Johnson, the other safety, has decided to enter the transfer portal. And so, that's three names from your secondary alone, if you're Hugh Freeze, if you're D.J. Durkin, that have decided to enter their names in the transfer portal when it opens up tomorrow. Again, safety Terrence Love, cornerback J.C. Hart, and safety C.J. Johnson have all said that when it opens up tomorrow, they're leaving Auburn and they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, you mentioned looking at some of the stats. Terrence Love recorded 7 tackles and had a pass breakup. He'll have two years of eligibility left wherever he decides to go. C.J. Johnson spent 2 years here at Auburn but did not play in any games for the Tigers. And C.J. Hart was kind of the name that you feel like more people had the idea of knowing. Again, his is the most impactful, where it feels like that's the one where you almost have to figure out a big missing piece. He saw action in 5 games last year, recorded 3 tackles, but again, had the potential to be one of those really, really key players in the secondary. But more importantly, not going against any of these three guys in particular, but to me, that tells me that the young guys are playing very, very good football.
No doubt.
And that these three names just happen to be pushed down the depth chart just a little bit. Again, all speculation. By no means am I saying that this is the reason that these three decided to make make the decision to intend to enter the transfer portal. But that gives you confidence for all of these young guys, whether it is the young guys in the portal that you brought in earlier this year or maybe this past year, but also the high school recruiting levels as well, where you're giving guys that were forced to play a lot of time as freshmen. They are now sophomores, but probably have the experience of an upperclassman. And then you have those freshmen that are coming in, and they're, I guess, here now, that already are uber talented and now are going to get the chance to play. And more likely than not, you feel like that's the reason why you're starting to see some of these names.
Yeah, I mean, I think between freshmen and sophomores, I think there's a lot of guys who have stepped in immediately and have made an instant impact, right? And that's what we talk about, whether it's the transfer portal or whether it's high school recruiting, to be an instant impact player. That's what you have to be. And in today's college football, if you're not, then you won't see the field. And thankfully, I think Auburn is becoming, or maybe already is, a place where if you're not talented, not just a little talented, I'm talking a lot talented, if you're not very talented, you're not going to touch the field on this team, especially on the defensive side of the football, because of the names that are in there, whether it's safeties or whether that it's the corners, right? You've got guys like Eric Winters, the freshman from Enterprise, or I think the one that's going to be insane is Anquan Fagans. I think he's the one that is really making some noise early this season. Other safeties back there, you have Amon Lane Gaines, who's a redshirt freshman who can make an impact. I mean, and even sophomores like Sylvester Smith or Caleb Harris back there. I mean, you have a lot of names in the safety spot on top of the guys you have on the corners who you think are going to be impactful as well. Kayan Lee, Tyler Scott, guys like that. I mean, you have big names in there that are making immediate impacts. And that's why, look, there's simply just not enough room for everybody. And that's just how it goes.
Yeah, you mentioned Kayan Lee, Jay Crawford in there as well. Champ Anthony possibly expected to make the return. Also, transfers that you were able to get in this portal, Rayon Strader.
I love
one of those
Rayon
really,
Strader.
Really big names that you're expecting a whole lot of this season. You mentioned Sylvester Smith, Caleb Harris, New Boy Fagan's in there, Eric Winters in there as well. All of these are underclassmen that are either expected to make a very big impact or already have made a very big impact on the defensive side of the football. And it's something that I've talked about over the past couple of months, going even back into last year, how a couple of years ago, especially the very first year with Coach Hugh Freeze, you felt like it was just relieving to get a name into a depth chart, right? You felt like it was nice to be able to, okay, whew, we got this three-star from X, wherever he was at before, and regardless of the overall talent level, you now have enough guys that can fill that linebacker position, or the safety position, or the offensive line position. Now, you're at the point where you have this talent roster. Everybody seemingly is very bought in. You feel like that answer has been, or that question has been answered this offseason with the amount of guys that returned following a losing record this past year, and you're buying stock into what is for the future. You're at the point now where you can be the aggressor. You don't have to just fill out names on a depth chart. You can sit there and go, we want this guy, and this guy, because they have to have a lot of talent if you're going to play. That's why they were able to get so many guys out of the high school level, because it's, hey, we can offer you early playing time for these top athletes that don't want to go sit a year or 2 years. We can get you. You can have those freshman mistakes, but you're going to see the field. You're going to see the hash marks on the football field as an underclassman. The freshmen saw it, and they're moving into sophomores. They can preach it down to the upcoming freshmen, some of those guys that we've named, or the younger guys like Rayon Strader, that's coming in as a transfer, still has a couple of years, but again, one of those younger guys that can make an immediate impact on the football field.
Well, I mean, you get to be picky if you're Auburn. You get to have a say in who plays, and it's not just, man, we have to play you because we have nobody else.
And what a luxury that is.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn dealt with that for years, and now you're in the spot defensively and in certain positions on the offensive side. I don't think it's complete yet, but the receiver room is one of those where you feel, yeah, if one man doesn't step up and produce, all right, cool, we got somebody right behind you ready to go. And no, it's not five-star after five-star after five-star like we've seen at Alabama during the Nick Saban era, but it's getting there slowly.
Well, and that's not realistic
anymore
with this age of college football. So to be able to have a guy like DJ Durkin that can command the defense and even able to get half of the names that you've seen over the past couple of years, you feel like you have no complaints about. We talked about it, what was it, a week or so ago? We were sitting there off air, either before the show or during one of our breaks, just actually spending time scrolling through the actual roster.
Oh, it's insane.
And it's just one of those, holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about him. Oh my goodness. Like, we're going to see all of these guys take the field, and it feels like it's one of those Under Armour top 300 or top 100 games, yet they're taking the defensive side of the football for the Auburn Tigers.
And you feel, too, that it will benefit Auburn later in the season, right? You don't have to have the same four guys rotate in the secondary, and by the time November comes around, they're exhausted or they're hurt or both or whatever the case may be, and you can keep them fresh throughout a single game or throughout a single season. And Auburn is now to the point, as a team, not just on either side of the football, but as a team, you were to the point where, A, you're talented enough to win football games this fall. I think we all believe that, and we've had the conversations and will continue to do so about the win total and things like that for what Freeze needs to do this year in 2025. But you're also at a spot where you're talented enough you have enough talent to where you have to develop them now. Like, yes, there's some really good players over there, but you still have to develop them. You still have to make this a destination place. Much like we talk about with basketball with Bruce Pearl, you have to make Auburn a destination place for years to come. You don't just go to Auburn because they pay you a lot of money. Well, there's a lot of places that'll pay you a lot of money, but can you get better here? A, can you win games? B, can you get better? Can you put me to the next level? Can you develop me enough as a defensive end or as a safety or as a tight end to where, yes, you are competitive in NIL. Yes, I like the coaching staff. Yes, I like the fan base, but I also want to play at the next level, and you've got to be able to do that. Now it's time for Auburn to prove that as a coaching staff here on the Plains.
Yeah, you're looking at some of the recruiting rankings. Auburn sits as ninth in the team transfer portal rankings for 2025. Their overall, what they've gained versus what they've lost, is almost an entire letter grade better, which again has talked about how nice it is that even if you didn't add some of these top-notch names, the fact that the top-notch names that you had last year are still on your roster, that feels like one of the biggest wins, and probably they spent just as much time recruiting those guys as the guys that they were trying to get in. You've gained 16 players, you've lost 18, you've lost 17 3-stars, you gained 12 3-stars, you gained 4-stars, gained 4 4-stars, and have not lost a 4-star. Everything on the transfer portal side of things is going the way that recruiting has gone over these past couple of years. Again, now you're almost at the point of what number does Auburn have to get to in a win total? What number does Auburn have to get to before the first bye? Do they have to beat one of their rivals? Do they have to beat both of their rivals? Is 9 wins too much? Is 10 wins too much? All of these conversations are being able to be had, and although you feel like they're almost nagging because it's the same things that you've had last year or even the year before of the possibilities, now you have the legitimate opportunity where every single possible question mark is trying to be answered. Coach Freeze was talking about it before we had the break, said that we haven't made a final determination yet on how many guys we're trying to get or trying not to get, but obviously interior D linemen, pass rushers, and guys with experience are guys that they're going to try and look for over these past couple of days into next week.
Portal opens officially tomorrow for football. We'll see what happens with Auburn. Couple of guys have announced they intend to enter. We'll see how many truly do and how long it takes, plus where Auburn decides to go to make some additions this spring. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today. We've talked a lot of we've hit all three sports. How about that? We've hit baseball, basketball, football today. I mean, hockey's up next, right?
That's
hey, Postseason's coming up, baby. Playoffs are here for NBA and the NHL, which I know we don't talk about that much on this show, but isn't it crazy that we're in the middle of April and postseason is here for those two sports? The fact that the Masters is done, spring football is done, basically, and now you've got playoffs for those two major sports that'll run through middle of June.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you don't necessarily think about those seasons coming to an end, and I know that you're going to do your best to get me into some playoff hockey. We watched the four your nations,
yeah,
or the,
yeah,
basically the All-Star game that actually turned into a very, very cool,
it was awesome,
event. And so if it's anything like that, maybe I'll have to sit down and watch one with you.
Wow, you heard it here first. Well, you do have regular season Major League Baseball that's going on. Saw something that the Braves released their lineup for today. I think I saw Lindsey Crosby tweet, this is the 17th game of the season and the 11th different lineup that the Braves have put out so far. More injury news yesterday.
I was about to say.
Yeah, more injury news for the Braves, so that's cool. I mean, at what point, man, at what point in the season do you just say, yeah, we're done? It's
credit,
over.
Credit to Wyler Ballard, though. Did you see those videos of him on air getting the girl's number?
Okay, I'm glad. I was hesitating whether I wanted to bring this up or not. We only have like a minute and a half, but have you seen the responses on that
everybody's
tweet?
Hating it.
Why? Who cares? I thought it was great. And maybe we're being biased because we're dudes. I don't know. I didn't see anything wrong.
If a girl on TV came up to me.
I thought it was respectful.
Babe, you're not
I thought she was into it, right? The main broadcast crew was talking to the reporter. He was talking with some fans at the Blue Jays game. The guys in the booth said, get her number. And the reporter was like, hey, they want me to get your number. And she did it. It wasn't like he was being weird about it. I just thought he made a joke about it. She seemed open to it. And I think people are forgetting this. She gave him her number. What's weird about that?
I don't know.
He didn't hit her up on Tinder.
And then like an hour or an inning or so later, he was still up there and I saw the camera pan back, but he still had the earpiece in and he found the camera and winked at it mid-conversation. I thought it was great.
That's awesome. I think there are some miserable people out there who are picking to be mad about something that does not impact their lives whatsoever, but welcome to 2025. So welcome to social media.
Are we allowed to make the joke that the Braves haven't, but their broadcast crew has made it around the bases?
Hey-o! How about that? Well, there you go. That's enough radio for us for the day. So if you did miss any of the show, be sure to go and catch up. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We talked to Coach Tiefert, Auburn baseball's pitching coach today. We talked about the win over LSU, previewing a little bit of Jack State, which you can catch that radio broadcast tonight over on Wings 94.3 for Auburn baseball. Also had our friend Aiden in Texas, who is their video and graphic designer there for Texas Athletics, join us a little bit today as well. And we've talked transfer portal news for basketball and for football. So all of that on a jam-packed show. If you missed it, check it out, ESPNAU.com. And tomorrow is Wednesday, which means Double D Wednesday. Daryl Appert, that's right. We'll also check in with Jordan Hill, see if anything's going on over in Athens. And so you can get that 2-4 tomorrow right here on ESPN 106.7. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins saying stay safe. We'll talk to you later.